Eddie, the Mechanic. Chapter 6. The Spring Track Season, Part 1. Tryouts for the high school spring track team this year are expected to go quite well. Now that the physical education staff no longer reports to Mr. Crum, everything has been very quiet. The first day of tryouts arrives, and Kathy, Paula, and Barbara are all ready to get the team prepared for the first meet. At the university, the majority of the track team members are a group of supposedly elite athletes on scholarship. Except for, perhaps, the McCutcheon brothers and a few others, who should not have been allowed to be on the team to begin with. The scholarship package offered to the athletes depends on performance. In high school, however, everyone is offered the opportunity to try out for the team. Sadly, the majority of the high school students trying out don't make the cut. Eddie has agreed to help out Mr. Fraser during tryouts and drives up as the equipment is being brought out to the field. While the athletes walk out to the track, Eddie sees Kathy and Paula unloading the equipment. Eddie walks into the storage building and exclaims, "Stop!" Kathy asks, "What's wrong?" Eddie points to the bed of the Cushman, laughs, and tells her, "Just look at that." Bobby B. would be appalled. The shot put is in the Cushman with the other equipment. It's going to get contaminated. Kathy replies by giving Eddie a kiss and telling him, "Yeah, I can see that. And it's a bit dirty too." Eddie helps out with the equipment as Barbara begins the 1 mile run to eliminate the aerobically deficient distance runners. Glancing over toward the school, Kathy tells Paula, "It looks like you just got your wish from last season." Paula asks, "Oh yeah. What's that?" Kathy tells her, "Look over toward the school. You'll see." Walking from the parking lot, Paula sees Mr. Crum walking out to the track. Paula comments, "I wonder what he wants." Kathy replies, "I'm sure we'll all find out soon enough." Kathy and Paula are in the clear for the moment. Mr. Crum is headed straight toward Mr. Fraser. An irate Mr. Crum tells Mr. Fraser, "Someone here squirted super glue in my car door lock. I want to know who did it." Since he can't get his key into the lock, Mr. Crum assumes someone has squirted super glue into the lock mechanism. Mr. Crum vividly recalls an incident years ago where someone squirted super glue into his office door lock. He was locked out of his office for the entire day before the maintenance department was able to get by to replace his lock. They could have got there a lot sooner, but since it was Mr. Crum who was having the problem, he received special treatment. Mr. Fraser asks the bitter principal, "How do you know it was someone here?" Mr. Crum replies, "I just know it was. The whole team passed by my car on their way out to the track. And the baseball team and tennis team aren't practicing yet." Mr. Fraser tells Mr. Crum, "So, then call a locksmith." Mr. Zunday, overhearing the conversation, allows the exchange of words to continue, only because it is amusing. But, seeing that he is not getting anywhere with Mr. Fraser, Mr. Crum approaches Kathy and Paula. Kathy tells Paula, "Trouble at 12 o'clock. That old Crum is headed this way." Paula replies, "Oh, great." Mr. Crum walks up, exclaiming, "Did one of you put super glue in my door lock?" Kathy insipidly replies, "No." "Have a nice day." Kathy goes about her business, and Mr. Crum exclaims, "I'm not done here." Kathy replies, "Well, I am. So, have a nice day." Mr. Crum informs Kathy, "You can't talk to me that way." Kathy, rebuffing the irate principal, exclaims, "I can talk to you any way I want. You're the one with the problem here, not me. So, get out of my way. I have work to do." Mr. Crum tells Kathy, "I want." Interrupting him, Kathy screams, "I said, get out of my way. Now, unless you want me to have someone belt your ass to the fence, leave." Mr. Zunday walks over and calmly tells Mr. Crum, "Crum, get away from the track. I'm sure you recall what happened last time you were on the track. If you don't remember, I'm sure John and Erica will be glad to remind you. Mr. Crum informs Mr. Zunday, someone put super glue in my door lock. Mr. Zunday tells Mr. Crum, that would be your problem, not mine. Now, get away from the track. Mr. Crum, knowing that he is getting nowhere, heads back to the school. Kathy tells Mr. Zunday, you know, I'm really getting sick of him. Mr. Zunday explains to Kathy, don't let him bother you. Let me tell you a secret. The calmer you reply to him, the more irate he gets. Try that sometime. For some reason, he can't handle it. If you're calm, eventually he'll blow a gasket and just leave. Kathy grins and replies, yeah, I'm going to do that next time. The next time didn't take long to arrive. After practice, Kathy, Eddie, Paula, and Barbara walk toward their vehicles. Mr. Crum, standing in the parking lot, is at a loss what to do about his car door lock. Kathy puts her stuff in her trunk, and Mr. Crum yells out to her, so, you claim you don't know anything about this? Kathy smiles and calmly replies, exactly. Mr. Crum exclaims, I can't get in my car. Kathy, learning from Mr. Zunday, calmly replies, that would be your problem, not mine. Kathy starts to get in her car to drive away. Mr. Crum exclaims, can't you guys help me out here? Kathy looks at Eddie, who asks Mr. Crum, what seems to be the problem? Mr. Crum exclaims, someone on the track team put super glue in my lock. I can't get my key in the door lock. Eddie asks Mr. Crum, what makes you think someone on the track team put super glue in your door lock? Mr. Crum replies, the key won't go in. And they were the only ones around. Messing with Mr. Crum, Eddie acts surprised, telling Mr. Crum, wow. The track team was the only ones around. That about says it all. It must have been one of them. Mr. Crum tells Eddie, I know it was one of them. Eddie replies, and you know what? I know who it was. Mr. Crum demands, who was it? I want to know who it was. Eddie confesses, it was Braden. In the middle of an amygdala hijack, Mr. Crum exclaims, see. I knew it. I knew it was one of them. Eddie bluntly tells Mr. Crum, I'm shitting you, Crum. Braden graduated last year. He was nowhere around. Eddie then tells Mr. Crum, let me see your key. Mr. Crum hands Eddie his key, and Eddie finds that the key will not easily go into the lock. Eddie gets a can of spray lubricant out of his trunk and lubricates Mr. Crum's door lock. Putting the key into the lock, Eddie turns it and unlocks the door. Eddie opens the door and tells Mr. Crum, there you go. Please have a safe trip home. And don't forget to change your oil at the recommended interval, otherwise the warranty on your new engine will be void. Kathy, after seeing Eddie open Mr. Crum's door, tells Paula, Crum must really be a special kind of stupid. Paula replies, yeah. I can see that. And it's getting more obvious every year. Kathy mentions, you know, he could have put the key in the other door and got in from the other side. Paula sarcastically comments, brain damage. It's got to be. Kathy replies, yeah. From running into the discus. Kathy gets in her car to leave, and Eddie tells her, I'll see you at home. Kathy and Paula drive off, leaving the irate Mr. Crum stewing about what a fool he made of himself. Eddie hangs around for a minute or so, wanting to hear how badly Mr. Crum's bearings are grinding. Mr. Crum starts his engine, and Eddie thinks back to Angelo's comment last year about how Mr. Crum expects his serious engine problems to be solved with a bottle of liquid Moran engine repair concentrate. Today, Mr. Crum's engine, once again, sounds like it could use a bottle or two. But Eddie heads home, knowing that Mr. Crum will show up at the service station needing another engine rebuild someday soon. Over at the university, things are looking up for the track team. The team has been practicing using the resistance sleds and running interval training drills on a regular basis. As much as some of the athletes hated the resistance sled when it was first introduced, they can now clearly see improvements in their performance. Practice is now held outside, regardless of the temperature and humidity. One day, over the winter, just to prove a point, Dr. Braun had the team drag the resistance sled up and down the sand track in the snow. Over the last few months, the coaches can all see dramatic improvements in the team's performance. With a big meet coming up in a few days, Dr. Braun is hopeful that the men will perform better than in previous meets. The women, though many of them are top-notch athletes, perform better now than earlier this year. And in the upcoming meet, the team will be up against the same 12 schools as during the winter season. The coaches are very interested to see whether using the training sleds and the interval training workout has made a noticeable difference. Eddie, Mark, Braden, Mitchell, and Bobby B all got official word that they will be eligible to compete during the next academic year. While they are not required to do so, they have all chosen to work out with the team at 7 a.m. every day. Working out with the team in the early morning leaves the rest of the day for doing other things. Now that Eddie is officially on the team, on one day, Kathy takes it upon herself to visit the university's radio station between classes. Kathy plans to inform them that Eddie, the high school national record holder in the 100-yard dash, will be joining the university's track team. She also plans to inform them of the other athletes that will be joining the team, hoping to spread the publicity and raise some awareness of how good the track team will be next year. Kathy really liked the great amount of attention the track team received in high school. At the university, however, not too much attention is paid to the track team. Walking into the campus radio station, Kathy is amazed at all of the equipment mounted in several 19-inch racks, each one being 7 feet high, all in a room behind a glass window. To Kathy, the equipment looks sophisticated and complicated enough to send a man to the moon. In the racks are equipment to monitor the transmitter, reel-to-reel tape machines, cart carousels, and even a computer with many blinking lights. But the awe of being impressed by the equipment abruptly comes to an end when Angela Meadows, the operator on duty, greets Kathy, saying, "Hi. You must be our new DJ. You're on the air in 5 minutes. You'd better get ready. I've got to run, or I'll be late to class." Pointing to the studio, Angela tells Kathy, "The studio's over there. Make yourself at home. Gotta run." Quite startled by Angela's introduction, Kathy replies in a panic, "No, wait. I just came here to give you guys some information." Quickly changing her disposition, Angela smiles, telling Kathy, "I'm only teasing. We greet everyone that we don't recognize that way." Kathy fell for that one, hook, line, and sinker. Kathy thinks to herself that Mark may just have some competition in messing with people. Angela invites Kathy into the radio station, where they have a seat at a table. Now that the ice is broken, Angela asks Kathy, "Okay, so you mentioned you have some information for us. What's up?" Kathy asks, "First, I was wondering if you guys do interviews with athletes." Angela replies, "All the time. What do you got for me?" Kathy is very surprised to see a very energetic personality off the track, but to be on the radio, being an extrovert is definitely an asset. Kathy explains, "Eddie Boganskaya, who was the fastest guy in the country last year in track, will be running track for the university next year. I thought it might be some good publicity for the university." Angela, who is a communications major, tells Kathy, "Sure. I can do that." That is good news to Kathy, who was suspecting she would have to go through a lot of red tape to even get to the right person. Angela asks, "So, can you tell me more about Eddie?" Kathy explains, "First, he never loses. He runs the 100-yard dash in 9.2 seconds, which is the national high school record. And Eddie holds the state record in the discus. Oh, and next year, Mark Svoboda, Axel Braden, Robert Bradshaw, and Gary Mitchell will also be joining the university's track team." They are all really awesome. Seeing the potential for more interviews, Angela is suddenly very interested. Angela asks, "What's their story?" Kathy replies, "Mark is also a sprinter and runs the 100-yard dash in 9.3 seconds. Mark holds the high school state record in the 220-yard dash. Braden holds the high school state record in the 440-yard dash, which is 46.6 seconds. Mitchell can break a 4-minute mile. And Robert Bradshaw holds the high school state record in the shot put. These guys are top-notch, and they are all joining our track team next year. They really are quite amazing." Not wanting to leave herself out, Kathy adds, "And I hold the women's high school state 100-yard dash record." Angela exclaims, "Oh, wow. Nice Porsche, by the way." Angela winks, then whispers to Kathy, "I saw your plate on the front of the car. I've been wondering whose car that was." Kathy tells Angela, "Thank you. Eddie made the plate for me." Angela explains to Kathy, "All this sounds really good. I can definitely do something with this." Kathy asks, "So, you're going to do the interview yourself?" Angela replies, "Sure. I'm a communications major. This is what I want to do when I get out of here." Kathy can clearly see that Angela has no problem expressing herself, speaks clearly, and has a very bubbly and outgoing personality. And, like is heard in many universities, instead of using the term, "when I graduate," Angela used the phrase, "when I get out of here." Angela goes on to explain, "Here, at the campus radio station, we have many communications majors like myself. We're usually the ones who get on the air. Some of us are DJs, some of us do interviews, and some of us do the campus news. I like doing interviews. There are also producers who edit the tapes of the interviews and produce the program. Occasionally, we do live shows and broadcast concerts. Then, there are the technical guys. They keep the station running and on the air. And there are people who do other things around here too." To Kathy, it sounds like she ran into the right person today, quite by accident. Angela sets up the interview with Eddie to be sometime right before the semester begins. Angela asks that Kathy bring her a list of Eddie's accomplishments in track and any information that would be helpful for the interview. Angela explains to Kathy that, since the interview will be taped, the station will have the opportunity to play it on multiple occasions. The first airing will be during the autumn semester. The second will be when the track season begins. Angela also mentions to Kathy that she would also like to interview the rest of the incoming athletes at some time. Best of all, Angela invites Kathy to sit in on Eddie's interview. When Kathy gets home, Eddie is working on Kathy's June buggy. Kathy walks into the detached garage and asks Eddie, "What are you working on?" From underneath the vehicle, Eddie replies, "Your June buggy." Kathy replies, "Oh, yeah. I see that. Is it almost done?" Eddie replies, "No. But it's getting there. It will definitely be ready by the beginning of the summer. But it depends on what else comes up." Kathy then tells Eddie, "I went by the campus radio station today." A minute later, Eddie emerges from underneath the June buggy and asks Kathy, "Okay, Katerina Karakova, what did you sign me up for this time?" Kathy asks, "What makes you so sure that I signed you up for something?" Eddie explains, "Well, let me think. First off, I don't think you're trading in your future career of being a gym teacher for a career in broadcasting. So, let's see. What else? Maybe I think you signed me up for something because you were waiting for me to ask the next question." Kathy smiles and replies, "Well, I did sort of sign you up for something. And, by the way, it's Katerina Boganskaya now." Eddie replies, "Yeah, but Katerina Karakova just sounds so cute. So, what did you sign me up for?" Kathy replies, "Okay, So there's this communications major, Angela, who wants to interview you about track. Then, they are going to put it on the air when school starts, and again when track starts. And she might want to interview Mark, Braden, Bobby B, and Mitchell too sometime. But she wants to start with you. Eddie smiles, wondering how Kathy comes up with some of the things she gets him involved in. Eddie starts joking, depicting how the interview will go, eloquently orating, "So, Eddie, I hear that you're a freshman."
"Yeah, I am."
"So, Eddie, what do you think of the university so far?"
"Well, I really wouldn't know. I don't go to classes."
"Oh, so you just run track?"
"Yeah, that's it. I just run track."
"Well, I'm also a mechanic."
"Really, you're a mechanic?"
"Yeah, I'm a mechanic and I get class credit for fixing cars." Kathy laughs and tells Eddie, "Hey now. That's not what they are going to ask you." Eddie replies, "Well, I'll go ahead and do it. Just make sure they don't bring up anything about classes, my major, and that sort of stuff." Kathy mentions, "Yeah. I can see that being a problem."
"Well, it's set."
Eddie will be interviewed by Angela at the campus radio station sometime before the autumn semester begins. Back at the service station, Angelo, who has made a considerable amount of money in the stock market, now opens the service station at 9:30 a.m. after Eddie gets out of track practice. By reinvesting his profits, Angelo is on his way to finally getting a bit of rest. Angelo has even been planning a vacation, something he has not done in a long time. Angelo is also a bit more laid back and relaxed after seeing his profits over the last few months. Braden is now working at the university campus as a police officer, working full-time until classes begin. The university had an open position, and Braden just happened to show up at the right time. While he is not at work, Braden is in the university's gym, out on the track running laps, or finding a way to visit Wendy. And to get his and Paula's house completed faster, Mark put Mitchell to work. Mark's crew now includes Paula, Bobby B, and Mitchell, and occasionally Erica. Paula has put herself in charge of getting the pool installed, which is in progress. Paula has also been spending a lot of time planning her and Mark's wedding. The day of the big spring divisional meet arrives, and the university team is more confident than ever that they may take home a few more medals. Hosted at the university's outdoor stadium, where the tribe has won many victories, the turf is familiar to all. Braden, who is working in an official capacity today, attends the meet in his police uniform, enjoying a front row seat to the action. With a stopwatch hidden in his pocket, Braden plans to time a few events himself. Eddie, Mark, Mitchell, and Bobby B are in the stands relaxing, enjoying the nice weather. While they are waiting for the meet to start, Eddie curiously asks Bobby B, "So, what does the university team have in the shot put?" Bobby B replies, "They have Pete Mendenhall, who is not too bad. And there's Fabio Cinquegrana. He's not too bad either. One of them will probably take home a medal today." Mendenhall won the bronze medal at the indoor meet this year. Joining the conversation, Mark asks, "Where do you fit in?" Bobby B boasts, "I can beat them both. They each throw around 55 to 58 feet. I can throw more than 67 feet. They are both nice guys." It is good to hear that the university has some strength in the field events compared with the other schools in the division. After the preliminary heats of the men's 100-yard dash are finished, the women are up next in that event. With a reunion of the annual girl fight, Kathy and Paula are in the first heat today, along with the other highly seeded runners. Liz Duncan, who is now a graduating senior, has her last chance to win the coveted gold medal in a divisional meet. Kathy and Paula plan to prevent her from doing so. Seeing Liz and a few other runners from last year, Kathy smiles, sighs, and says, "Wow. Here we all are again. Good luck to all of you."
This time, for the moment, Liz is silent. She has learned that saying anything at all will get her nowhere. Kathy, who has not lost a short sprint since she's been in college, is not about to start now. The starter announces, "On your marks," followed by "Set," as the runners get in the set position. The gun is fired, and Kathy and Paula, leaving the blocks, both let out a loud primal scream. Within a few yards, Kathy and Paula are tied for the lead, with Liz right on their heels. At the halfway point, Kathy, Paula, and Liz break from the pack, but Liz appears to be losing a little ground over the two leaders. Kathy crosses the finish line first, with Paula finishing right behind her. Liz finishes in third place yet again, but this is not the final. Liz has one more chance to win the gold medal. Without a doubt, Kathy, Paula, and Liz know they have all made the final. The other finalists will be determined after the remaining heats. During mid-morning, the call is made for the men's 440-yard dash. Braden, who is working security detail, makes his way to the starting line. The 440-yard dash often brings with it the most intense competition of the meet. No other race on the track attracts Braden's attention more than the 440-yard dash. Braden, also wanting to know the 220-yard split time of the leader, has his own stopwatch in hand. Braden clearly suspects the leader and winner will be Johnson. Up in the stands, the tribe has their eyes on this race. Solely interested in who places in each heat, Eddie, Mark, and Mitchell will time only the first, second, and third place winners. Until, of course, when McCutcheon or Leggett run. Although neither of them are any competition for Eddie, he is interested in whether his training sled has improved either McCutcheon's or Leggett's performance. The first heat of the 440-yard dash brings a winning time of 46.1 seconds, by none other than Johnson. On his stopwatch, Braden clocked Johnson at about a 23-second split, indicative of a constant pace. Second place, which will be up for discussion in the next few heats, is held by a runner with a time of 50.3 seconds. In the following heats, it is revealed that no one is able to beat Johnson's time. Braden, standing near the timekeepers, gets the inside scoop on what is coming up in each heat before anyone else. Braden wants to know where he will stand next year when he is eligible to compete and who the key players are. So far, the afternoon brings Braden only good news. The third heat brings Leggett, who stands behind the blocks in lane 3. Eddie announces, "Hey, the lug nut is out on the track. He's in lane 3. I'm clocking him," as he winds up his stopwatch, signifying that his stopwatch may be running for a while. The gun is fired, and Leggett appears to be among the front runners in his heat. As the sprint progresses, Eddie, who is quite surprised, comments, "Wow, the lug nut is actually running today." When Leggett crosses the finish line, Eddie announces, "Wow, I clocked the lug nut at 54.2 seconds. Eddie watches as Leggett returns to the bench. From a distance, Eddie can clearly see that Coach Herndon appears to be happy with Leggett's performance today. McCutcheon walks on the track and is in lane 2 for the fifth heat. Mark comments, "Here goes McCutcheon." Eddie, who is kind of laid back at the moment, tells Mark, "You time him. My stopwatch only goes to 15 minutes. After that, I might doze off and lose track of time." Mark laughs and exclaims, "And just look at him. He's checking his shoelaces." Eddie replies, "I think he's damaged for life." The gun is fired, and Eddie starts counting out, 1 McCutcheon, 2 McCutcheon, 3 McCutcheon. At the end of the race, McCutcheon surprisingly crosses the finish line in second place. Mark announces, "Wow. He actually broke 60 seconds. He ran a 55.2. Eddie then exclaims, "Wow. The training sled and the interval training workout actually works." Since Eddie delivered the 4 training sleds, Coach Herndon has had the sprinters dragging the sleds 2 days a week, on Monday and Thursday, putting them through a grueling workout. On Tuesday and Friday, the sprinters hit the track, running the interval training workout. And on Wednesday, when the distance team is using the training sleds, the sprinters polish their handoff skills. A 55.2-second quarter mile is McCutcheon's personal record. And 54.2 seconds is Leggett's personal best. Right before lunch, the call is made for the women's 100-yard dash final. Kathy, Paula, and Liz have all qualified and head to the starting line for their reunion. Kathy remembers last year when Liz coldly asked her and Paula, "So, you're the freshman?" So, this year, Kathy smiles and casually mentions to Liz in a calming voice, "I'm a sophomore this year." Liz brashly replies, "So, what's it to you?" Kathy sweetly replies, "That means you're a senior. I'm going to miss you next year." Liz, now infuriated, tries to respond, but she is tongue-tied. Abruptly turning away from Kathy, she unexpectedly stares right into Paula's face. Paula calmly comments, "I'm a sophomore too, you know." Liz, who is done with Kathy and Paula, screams, "Shit," and walks a few yards away. The starter announces, "This is the 100-yard dash final. Good luck to everyone. On your marks." Announcing, set, the starter waits as everyone gets into position. The gun goes off, and the runners are out of the blocks. Kathy's and Paula's primal scream burns into Liz's memory, and the eight runners fight it out for the title of the fastest female in the division. Kathy pushes herself toward the finish line harder, both wanting another gold medal and wanting to deny Liz the gold medal. At the finish line, Kathy takes first place and Paula takes second place. Liz, who could not manage her emotions at the starting line, finishes in fourth place, right behind a junior wearing number 902. The girl wearing number 902 jumps up and down and exclaims, "I got third. I got third." Seeing the girl's excitement, Kathy walks over and gives number 902 a high five, telling her, "Great job. You're awesome." Paula then walks over, also giving number 902 a high five. Kathy asks number 902, "What's your name?" The girl replies, "Adriana." Kathy replies, "I'm Kathy, and this is Paula. That was a really great run." Adriana replies, "Thank you. I really wasn't expecting to win anything today. I'm so happy." Paula tells her, "You did good, girl." The women head back to their benches as Liz bitterly stands off to the side with her hands on her hips. When they return to the bench, everyone gives Kathy and Paula a high five. Not paying too much attention to their winning times, Kathy and Paula find out that, today, they have both set a personal best. They give each other a high five, now wondering what the time of the third place runner was. But, with the 100-yard dash final now over, Kathy and Paula can now get lunch. Eddie, and the rest of the incoming freshmen for next year, join the team for lunch. With them today, as they head to the university cafeteria, is Dr. Braun. On the way to lunch, Dr. Braun mentions to Eddie, "Since we've been using your training sleds, a lot of the runners' times have come down." Eddie replies, "Yeah, I've noticed that. Leggett looks like he had a good run today." Dr. Braun, giving Eddie some good news, reveals, "So far, everyone has run a personal best in today's divisional competition. The only explanation I have is the change in the workout methodology and your training sled." Eddie comments, "Mark even noticed that McCrutchen had a decent run." Dr. Braun admits, "I saw that. That was quite a surprise to all of us." Eddie is so accustomed to mispronouncing McCutcheon's name that it now comes out McCrutchen automatically. After lunch, the call is made for the men's 1 mile run. After his conversation with Dr. Braun, Eddie is interested to see if Stone's performance has also improved. Stone, who has hit a performance barrier, has been looking for any way at all to break through. Expected to win the mile today, Stone is on the track, waiting for the gun. Mitchell, who has been training with the team, is also interested to see how well Stone performs today. Mitchell, who is studying Stone, has Eddie and Mark catch a few of Stone's quarter-mile times. After all, if Mitchell and Stone will be on the same team, one of them will have to settle for second place. Mitchell prefers that second place goes to Stone. The gun is fired, and the first heat of milers are off. As expected, Stone sprints the first few yards, securing the leading position. The end of the first lap reveals Stone ran the first quarter mile in 57.4 seconds. At the half-mile mark, Eddie informs Mitchell his second quarter mile was 59.8 seconds. Stone, who is out to set his own personal best today, does not care about the competition or race strategy. He knows his only real competition, Mitchell, is sitting in the stands with a stopwatch in his hand. At the end of the third quarter mile, Mark announces, "Not bad." He clocked a 60.3 third quarter. Without any direct threat behind him, Stone crosses the finish line, as Eddie announces, "The last quarter mile was also 60.3 seconds. During this run, surprisingly, two of Stone's quarter mile split times were better than average. Using the approximate split times, Mitchell calculates Stone ran a 3-minute, 57.8 second mile. Eddie, however, brought both of his stopwatches and tells Mitchell Stone ran a 3:58.1. Eddie hands the stopwatch to Mitchell, who realizes he now has some competition. Stone realized the same thing a few months ago when Mitchell arrived on the scene. Mitchell asks, "What year is Stone in anyway?" Eddie replies, "No one really knows." Mitchell, who is now curious, asks, "Okay. Now, explain this to me. How can anyone not know what year he's in?" Eddie whispers, "It's some sort of secret, so you can't make it public." Stone plays in a band. He's getting a music degree to run track. But this is the real secret. He doesn't go to any classes. So, that's how come no one knows what year he's in. Mitchell replies, "Wow. I wonder how they get away with that." Eddie, who got the same deal as Stone, explains, "I guess if you're fast enough, they can do anything they want." The call is made for the women's mile medley relay. This is Kathy, Paula, Janice, and Barbara's event. No one has beat them this year or last. On the track again with Paula is Liz Duncan. Liz gives Paula a dirty look, but Paula does not even notice. Liz, apparently wanting some attention, gets none. Evidently, Liz wants a verbal competition in addition to the physical competition on the track. The truth is that Liz will win neither. Also on the track is number 902, who took third place earlier in the 100-yard dash. Number 902 is smiling, ready to run, and waves to Paula. Once everyone is behind their blocks and settled down, the starter announces, "On your marks." The starter announces, "Set." The gun goes off, and Paula is out to show everyone why the 220-yard dash is her race. During the first 50 yards, with a repeat performance of the divisional meet earlier this year, Paula is again in the lead. Paula hands off to Kathy, with everyone in the stadium knowing who just started running. Kathy's primal scream has become her personal signature. Kathy increases the lead and hands off to Janice. Back up in the stands, Eddie times Janice's leg. Eddie is wondering if Janice's 440-yard time has improved. Janice can reliably run a 55 to 56 second quarter mile, but, last season, had trouble breaking that barrier. Eddie's impressed, noticing her split time is somewhere near 26 seconds. Janice hands off to Barbara, with Eddie timing Janice's leg at 54.5 seconds. Barbara, who has been handed a 17-second lead on a golden platter, knows she has the race wrapped up. As Barbara runs her half-mile leg, the Ice Princess, Liz, silently stares at Barbara. Barbara, along with the rest of the mile medley relay team, has just about wrapped up denying Liz of another gold medal. As Barbara crosses the finish line, Liz is denied yet another gold medal in a divisional meet. Kathy, Paula, Janice, and Barbara exchange high fives and hugs and head to the team bench. At the end of the meet begins the awards ceremony. The meet announcer introduces today's officials, recognizes the coaches, and commends the athletes for their superior performances today. The ceremony then moves on, recognizing the winners. In a divisional meet, winning a medal is a significant accomplishment, as there can be up to 36 competitors in the individual events and 12 competitors in the relay events. In the women's events, Kathy is called to the stage to receive the gold medal in the women's 100-yard dash, standing next to Paula, who takes the silver medal. And standing to the other side of Kathy is Adriana, taking the bronze medal. In other events, Paula takes the gold medal in the women's 220-yard dash, with Kathy taking the silver medal. Janice again wins the gold medal in the women's 440-yard dash, setting a personal record. Janice also takes the bronze medal in the half mile. Barbara wins the gold medal in the half mile and in the mile. And Kathy, Paula, Janice, and Barbara are called to the stage to receive the gold medal in the mile medley relay. In the men's events, Johnson, with a repeat performance of the divisional meet earlier this year, takes the gold medal in the men's 440-yard dash and in the half mile. In the men's mile, Daryl Stone wins the gold medal, setting a personal record and a record for the university. Daryl, of course, held the previous record for the university. And Pete Mendenhall takes the silver medal in the shot put today. Of other interest, many of the university team members have significantly improved their performance. This is encouraging to the team, especially to those who will return next year. Nearly every team member has set a personal record in their event during this week. This is particularly encouraging to the coaching staff who, aside from a few specific team members, has only a marginally competitive team. After the meet, Eddie and Kathy head out to the pizzeria for dinner, with the rest of the tribe joining them. Today, however, a good number of the track team members join in on the celebration. Among them is Janice who, after having an awesome day, really didn't feel like going back to her dorm room to be by herself. When they arrive, Joe yells out from behind the counter, "Hey Kathy, it looks like you won again today." Kathy replies, "Yeah. Me and Paula got 3 medals each. And this is our friend, Janice. She won a few medals too today." Janice quickly notices a few of the tribe's pictures on the wall. Since they are a large group, Joe comes over and takes their order. Kathy, ordering for her and Eddie, tells Joe, "I want a discus. And I want some of those little discus thingies on it. Oh, and some of those cut-up javelins with garlic butter. And we want a salad, but no drill bits." Janice asks Paula, "What was that she ordered?" Paula explains to Janice, "This goes way back. A discus is a pizza. The little discus thingies are pepperoni. And the drill bits are those spiral pasta things they put on salads. Oh, and a cut-up javelin is a breadstick." Janice laughs and replies, "That is really funny that he knew exactly what Kathy was ordering." Oddly, among the group who is getting pizza are McCutcheon and his older brother. The fact that the McCutcheon brothers even bothered coming to the celebration dinner puzzles Mark and Paula. While they are eating, Paula tells Mark, "McCutcheon is not here for the celebration. He has an ulterior motive." Mark asks Paula, "How do you know?" Paula replies, "My superpowers. I just know." Hearing the word superpowers coming from Paula, Kathy whispers to Paula, asking, "Hey, what's up?" Paula whispers to Kathy, "McCutcheon is up to something. Just watch him. He's not here to celebrate. He's here for some other reason." McCutcheon, constantly looking around the table, is preoccupied trying to figure out the dynamics between certain people. Mark whispers to Paula, He might be on your team, but he's not on your side. Paula replies, "You got that right." After lunch, everyone walks out to the parking lot. Since everyone drove to the meet separately, everyone heads to their own vehicle. McCutcheon, who hitched a ride from another team member, watches carefully as Paula gets into her beach patrol jeep. McCutcheon thinks back to a while ago when he saw Mark, Eddie, Kathy, and Paula driving Paula's jeep on the beach. A light suddenly goes on in McCutcheon's head, albeit a very dim one. McCutcheon finally figures out that Mark was feeding him a bunch of bullshit that day on the beach about being part of the beach patrol. McCutcheon then sees Kathy, along with Janice, get into Kathy's Porsche 914. McCutcheon sees Eddie get into his MGB, and Mark get into his brand new Jeep pickup truck, complete with a new service body. As if that wasn't enough, the sound of Bobby B, starting his BSA Starfire bike is the icing on the cake. McCutcheon thinks back to all the rumors he's heard over the years that many of the Northside High School track team members got paid to run. Recalling all the rumors that Bobby B makes his tuition money to throw the shot put, the words of Mr. Ruff's official complaints echo in his head. Watching envy and jealousy pour out of every orifice and expressed from every appendage of McCutcheon's body, Paula is sure McCutcheon is up to something. Paula knows now to keep a close eye on McCutcheon. Back at the high school, the spring semester brings Mr. Crum another flavor of a problem waiting for him one Monday morning. The postal carrier walks into the school, delivering the daily mail as usual. Today, however, Mr. Crum is the lucky recipient of a piece of certified mail, which he reluctantly signs for. No one typically sends certified mail to deliver good news, especially when the return address is the name of a law firm. This is really not what Mr. Crum wanted to walk into on Monday morning. Mr. Crum opens his envelope, which contains a letter that states, "Mr. Maurice Crum, please be advised that this law firm represents the Northside High School track team. You are hereby commanded to appear for an injunction hearing, scheduled at 9 a.m. on April 31st at the county courthouse. If you fail to appear for this hearing, a warrant will be issued for your arrest. Sincerely, Willie Burnham, Esquire." Receiving the legal correspondence, Mr. Crum, to say the least, is very distressed. Mr. Crum's fear of the legal system goes back many years ago when he suspended John Davies, who was the high school's star football quarterback. Davies, who was on target to get a scholarship to a major university, was suspended by Mr. Crum for drinking a beer on school grounds. Even though Davies was of legal age and school was not in session, Mr. Crum suspended him anyway. When Davies was not allowed to play in the divisional semifinals, his father took the issue to the school board and threatened to take legal action. Shortly afterwards, Mr. Zunday, hired by the school board, arrived on the scene to keep Mr. Crum in check. Further fear of the legal system plagued Mr. Crum when Erica's father, a police captain, showed up at his office 2 years ago when Erica was in an altercation with Chucky. Captain Gabriel was again called out to the school this year when Terry Haynes and her two cohorts attacked Erica. Mr. Crum, for some reason, has clearly developed an irrational fear of the police and legal system. As a result of receiving today's letter, Mr. Crum haphazardly organizes a meeting to get to the bottom of the situation. At the beginning of the day's last period, the announcement comes over the public address system, "Will the entire indoor and spring track team please report to room 105 immediately? Mr. Fraser and Mr. Zunday, please report to room 105. Mr. Harrison, please report to the gym." Hearing the announcement, Mr. Fraser asks Mr. Zunday, "Do you know what that's all about?" Mr. Zunday replies, "I can only imagine. Perhaps the entire track team is being investigated to see who may be missing a gold medal." After Mr. Harrison, the permanent substitute, arrives at the gym, Mr. Fraser and Mr. Zunday head to room 105. Being the last to arrive, Mr. Fraser and Mr. Zunday see Mr. Crumb pacing the floor in front of the classroom. Mr. Crumb tells the two coaches, "Please have a seat." Mr. Zunday replies, "I prefer to stand, thank you. What is this all about? Oh, wait. Since it is so late in the year, I'm guessing there must be an epidemic of overdue library books." Mr. Crumb brazenly replies, "No, it's not. I'm sure you already know what this is about." Mr. Zunday instructs Mr. Crumb, "Actually, I don't have the slightest idea what this is about. This is a school, so why don't you educate us?" Erica, who treads in deep water when it comes to Mr. Crumb, comments, "Yeah. Educate us. Waiting." But Erica doesn't mind treading in deep water because Mr. Crumb would surely drown in anything deeper than a puddle. Turning on an overhead projector, Mr. Crumb displays the letter he received from the attorney's office. Mr. Crumb takes the time to read the letter aloud to the track team, not understanding that the track team is quite literate and can all read it for themselves. Mr. Crumb announces, "First of all, I want to know who is behind this legal action." The room falls silent, apparently inferring that no one knows anything about the letter. The team members look at each other, wondering why Mr. Crumb is extremely irate. Not getting any response from the team, addressing Mr. Fraser and Mr. Zunday, Mr. Crumb brashly asks, "Do either of you know what this is about?" Mr. Zunday looks at Mr. Fraser with a look suggesting that Mr. Crumb is from a different planet. Wanting to throw Mr. Crumb off track, Mr. Zunday replies, "No." "So, what's your point?" Mr. Crumb exclaims, "What's my point? I want to know what this is all about." Mr. Zunday instructs Mr. Crumb, "You can always attend the hearing and find out." But Mr. Crumb won't sleep at night knowing that he is in some sort of legal trouble, so he cannot wait that long. As Mr. Crumb addresses the team, Mr. Zunday whispers to Mr. Fraser, "Crumb is far dumber than I ever thought. The first problem I see is that April has only 30 days, not 31. And do you see the law firm name on the letterhead? Also, take a look at the address of the law firm." Mr. Fraser looks at the law firm name and starts laughing hysterically. Trying to get the words out, Mr. Fraser whispers back to Mr. Zunday, "No one can be that stupid." Mr. Zunday points out, "Well, I'm afraid Crumb apparently is that stupid, and then some. Let's have some fun with this." Mr. Crumb, interrupting his own meeting, in a demanding tone, asks Mr. Fraser and Mr. Zunday, "And just what is so funny over there?" Mr. Zunday, taking control of the meeting, replies, "Erica, will you please read the name of the law firm on the letterhead to Mr. Crumb?" Mr. Zunday could have read it himself, but he figures why pass up the chance to have Erica read it to him, since Erica is perhaps Mr. Crumb's least favorite student. Erica reads the name of the law firm to everyone present, saying, "Goda, Helen, Bach, and Burnham." Erica starts laughing hysterically. A few members of the track team also start laughing. Mr. Zunday tells Erica, "Now, please read the address of the law firm to Mr. Crumb." Erica reads the address, announcing, 69 Rockhard Drive, and laughs hysterically as she hammers her fist on the desk. By now, nearly the entire track team has caught on that the letter is obviously a prank. Mr. Crumb, however, fails to see what is so funny. Mr. Crumb brashly asks, "Will someone please explain to me what is so funny? This is no laughing matter." Mr. Zunday calmly explains to the school's principal, "Crumb, regarding the letter you received, the first problem I see is that April only has 30 days, not 31. You're the principal. You should have known that. The second problem I see is that the law firm name is a pun on go to hell and back and burn him. What should be quite embarrassing to you, however, is the law firm's address, which is 69 Rockhard Drive. And look at the name of the attorney who signed the letter. That's another pun, but I'll leave you something to figure out for yourself. It appears the entire track team can see this, but you're still in the dark. And if you can't see any of this, I suggest that you hire the law firm of Shackle, Bind, and Lay to represent you. The entire track team is laughing hysterically at Mr. Crumb, realizing what a sucker he really is. Mr. Crumb starts sweating, knowing that someone has succeeded at really making a fool out of him. Backpedaling, Mr. Crumb exclaims, "The reason I called this meeting is because I want to know who sent this letter." Mr. Zunde calmly replies that information should be easy enough to ascertain. Mr. Zunde addresses the track team, asking, "Did any of you send this letter to Mr. Crumb?" The track team is totally silent. After 15 seconds, Mr. Zunde tells Mr. Crumb, "Well, it appears that no one here sent the letter to you. Perhaps you should interrogate the golf team, or perhaps the baseball team. They may have had the balls to send that letter." Mr. Crumb, who is quite disturbed, replies, "Someone here sent me this letter. And it wasn't anyone on the baseball team." John asks Mr. Crumb, "How do you know it wasn't your secret Santa?" Mr. Crumb, focusing his attention on John, brashly asks, "And just how do you know about that?" Playing dumb, John replies, "Know about what?" Mr. Crumb replies, exclaiming, "The Christmas presents I've received." Making Mr. Crumb answer more questions, John asks, "What kind of Christmas presents did you receive?" Mr. Crumb, who does not realize that John is in the middle of outsmarting him, exclaims, "You know exactly what I'm talking about." Lowering the boom, John explains, "Well, if it's about the medal you received last Christmas with the ass on it, everyone in the school knows about that." The whole team laughs hysterically as Mr. Fraser whispers to Mr. Zunde, "John is almost as witty as Eddie." Mr. Zunde whispers back, "Just wait 2 years." Mr. Crumb, getting absolutely nowhere with his investigation, concludes, "Okay. I know one of you is behind this. I have my eye on every single one of you." Erica interjects, "That's because Dr. Brooks told you that you have to come to all the meets. We all heard about that too." Mr. Crumb tells Erica, "Young lady, I've had enough out of you." Erica asks, "Does that mean I can leave now?" Mr. Crumb, who is apparently quite angry, replies, "I'm running this meeting, not you." The inevitable sarcastic comeback, "Waiting," is expressed by Erica, the meaning of which is now known by the entire track team, Mr. Zunde, Mr. Fraser, and even Mr. Crumb himself. Mr. Crumb, who has had enough embarrassment for today, tells everyone, "Enough of this for now. And, as I said, I have my eye on every single one of you." The students head back to their last class of the day as Mr. Fraser and Mr. Zunde walk over to the gym. On the way, Mr. Zunde tells Mr. Fraser, "I really wish I knew who was behind that letter. These pranks are really good, and they are getting better every year." Mr. Fraser explains, "I've thought about this. Unless one of the teachers has the equipment to rework one of the track medals at home, that medal was probably modified in the shop. But I've never seen either Mr. Malik or Mr. Anderson anywhere near the athletic office." Mr. Zunde suggests, "Maybe one of the students took it and gave it to one of them. You can be sure that whoever got the first medal knows the second one is there. Perhaps it will disappear next Christmas." Mr. Fraser replies, "Then, I'll leave it right where it is. I'll be looking forward to it disappearing." Wondering what track and field will be like many years from now, Eddie and Kathy decide to go into the future to watch a track meet at the high school. They invite Mark and Paula, who decide to take a break from working on their house, which is almost finished. Meeting at Mark's house, they talk about how many years to go into the future. After a long discussion and reviewing future calendars, they decide 20 years into the future, on a Friday, will be a good time. In case there is no track meet on the day they picked, Kathy writes down the dates of every Friday in the springtime, 20 years from now. There is sure to be a meet on one of those days. Arriving into the future at their chosen date and time, they ride their bicycles to the high school, passing by Mark's parents' house. By the equipment that is parked in the driveway, Mark can tell his parents are still living there. On the way, they pass by Eddie's service station. Kathy yells out, "Hey, look. You're closed." Eddie yells back, "I see that. I wonder where I am." Mark mentions, "Maybe you guys are at the beach." Kathy replies, "Or maybe we're at the track meet." Driving by Kathy's parents' house, Kathy is quick to notice that her dad got the Porsche that he always wanted. The Porsche, however, is not a 914, but a 911. They then ride to the high school. Entering the parking lot, they notice that there is, in fact, a track meet today. They walk with their bicycles through the south gate. Mark casually comments to Eddie, "There's where you always belted the Chucky to the fence." Eddie replies, "That's one person I'm glad I don't see anymore." Mark throws out the question, "I wonder what the Chucky is doing now." Eddie replies, "He's probably sucking up taxpayer money in a jail somewhere." Mark returns the serve, stating, "Maybe there's a little Chucky on the track team throwing the shot put." Paula exclaims, "Stop it, you guys. There's no little Chucky throwing the shot put." Yanking Paula's chain, Kathy replies, "You might be right. The Chucky, Junior, could be running the 100-yard dash." They then head toward the track, finding a place under the bleachers to lock their bicycles. Walking toward the track, Kathy exclaims, "Wow. They got a new track and new stands. This place has been completely redone." Paula replies, "I can see that." Eddie comments, "It looks pretty good." As the new track comes into view, Mark mentions, "This place looks really awesome. Somebody put a lot of money into this place." Looking around carefully, they search for someone who might know them, like Mr. Fraser or Mr. Zunday. Hopefully, Mr. Crumb is nowhere around. They know they must steer clear of anyone who might know them from the past and recognize them. Seeing that the coast is clear, they find a seat that would afford a quick getaway if need be. They watch as the team assistants move the equipment from the storage building to the field, preparing for the meet. Mark comments, "I wonder how long they have been mistreating the shot put like that. Look at that. It's laying in the dirt." Eddie answers, "21 years. That's how long. That's when Bobby B. left." Paula then asks, "I wonder if they ever took care of the tick infestation on the track." Mark replies, "Wow. We really did mess with everyone." Paula reminds Mark, "And you're not done yet." As they are sitting back relaxing, they see the bus from the opposing team drive up. Paula exclaims, "Aren't we in luck?" Kathy asks, "What?" Paula exclaims, "We're running against Centerville." Mark reminds everyone, "That was always my favorite meet of the year." Eddie comments, "I missed that one my senior year." Paula tells Eddie, "That's when the ticks showed up on the track." Kathy mentions, "Yeah, the ticks were on the track during that whole spring season." As the Centerville team makes their way toward the track, the Northside team emerges from the locker room. They quickly spot Mr. Zunday walking out with the field athletes. Mr. Zunday is kind of hard to miss. Seeing no sign of Mr. Fraser, Mark asks, "Does anyone see Mr. Fraser?" Kathy replies, "Not yet. He usually walked out after everyone else." With the whole team congregating around the bench, there is no sign of Mr. Fraser anywhere. Looking around, Eddie spies the team's head coach. Eddie points out, "There's the new coach." Kathy asks, "Where?" Eddie replies, "That big guy who keeps pointing to the starting line." Mark asks, "I wonder who that is." Confidently, Eddie replies, "It's Johnson." Paula exclaims, "Really? How do you know?" Eddie explains, "I went to the future once to pick up some vitamins, and I was talking with the doctor. He mentioned that he was talking with Coach Johnson one day. So, Johnson is our team's coach now." Paula remarks, "Yeah, I can see that now. It kind of looks like him." Mark asks, "I wonder where Mr. Fraser is." Eddie replies, "Another time, when I was in the future, I remember hearing that he took some sort of job at the university." Mark mentions, "I wonder why he took a job there." Eddie surmises, "Maybe he got sick of dealing with Mr. Crumb." Paula comments, "Yeah, I can definitely see that." As the meet begins, they all take out their stopwatches, curious to see how well the runners perform 20 years into the future. Once the hurdlers are out of the way, the runners line up for the 100-yard dash. For Eddie and the tribe, this is when the meet really begins. The runners, all lined up, wait for the gun as anxiously as Eddie, Kathy, Mark, and Paula. Four stopwatches in the stands start as the gun is fired. After 25 yards, it is clearly a two-person race. Two Northside runners break away, leaving everyone in the dust, taking first and second place in the event. Third place goes to Centerville, which was a very distant third. Eddie, who timed the first place runner, comments, "I must have really messed up. I got 10.5 seconds. Kathy, who timed the second place runner, exclaims, "Wow. I clocked second place at 10.7 seconds. Eddie replies, "Wow. These guys are really slow. Poor Johnson. It looks like he doesn't have much to work with." Mark and Paula, timing the third and fourth place runners, reported equally as dismal times. Kathy suddenly exclaims, "Wait. I know why their times are off. This is a new track. They are running 100 meters now, not 100 yards. Eddie replies, "Yeah, now that you mention it, I see that." Paula comments, "That's really interesting. Sometime in the last 20 years, the events were converted to meters." Paula, reminding Mark of the past, tells him, "See? You should have brought your metric stopwatch." Mark, the master of messing with people, grins, remembering how he fell for that one hook, line, and sinker. Kathy, desperate for information, takes a walk down the moderately populated bleachers and asks one of the spectators, "So, the track is measured in meters now, and not yards?" The spectator replies, "It is. I don't ever remember the track being in yards." Kathy replies, "Okay, thanks." As an afterthought, Kathy asks the spectator, "And the coach is Coach Johnson, right?" The spectator replies, "That's him, himself. Coach Johnson. He's a legend around here, along with a few others who occasionally show up for the meets." Kathy wants to ask more questions, but decides to wait. As the second heat is out of the blocks, the runners in the first heat return to the bench and take a seat. As expected, the second heat brings with it the slower runners. Eddie, who was timing the first place runner, states, "I got 12.2 seconds for the winner." Looking at her stopwatch, Kathy comments, "I should have brought a calendar. I clocked the guy at 12.9 who came in second place." Neither of those times represents a competitive time. Mark mentions, "At least the guys who took first and second place today are really good." The meet moves on to other events. Mark glances over to the field events, where Mr. Zunday accompanies the field athletes. Mark tells everyone, "Hey, check it out. The shot put guy is about to throw." On the pad, the Northside athlete throws the shot put, hurling it into a region of worn away grass where it appears to have landed many times before. The field judge makes the measurement, yelling back to another field judge, 44, 8 and a half. The other field judge repeats the measurement, followed by the field judge making the measurement, giving him a thumbs up, signaling that they properly communicated the measurement. Mark comments, "Not bad. But he's no Bobby B." Unknown to the group is that Bobby B still holds the school record in the shot put. And Eddie still holds the state record in the discus, and the national record in the 100-yard dash. The call is made for the 400-meter dash. This is one of the events the group has been waiting for. Kathy points out, "Hey, the same two guys that ran the 100-yard dash, oops, the 100-meter dash, are running the 440-yard dash. Eddie tells Kathy, "You probably mean the 400-meter dash." Kathy replies, "Yeah, that's it. It's going to take me a while to get used to this metric stuff." Paula predicts, "I bet they'll win. They didn't have any competition in the 100. The stopwatches are ready, waiting for the gun." The gun is fired, and the north side runner, who won the 100-meter dash earlier, is quickly in the lead. For the first 100 meters, the competition pushes him hard. By the 200-meter point, the two north side runners have the race wrapped up, as the competition rapidly loses ground. As the winner crosses the finish line, Eddie tells everyone, "I clocked him at 49.4 seconds. Eddie then asks, "Is that good?" Kathy informs Eddie, 400 meters is less than 440 yards by like 2.5 yards. Eddie replies, "Then, that's really good." The second place runner, from north side, comes in at 50.2 seconds. Taking third place, also running for north side, is a girl, delivering a time of 55.9 seconds. Apparently, women are still allowed on the track team. Kathy is now very curious. She walks down the row again and asks the spectator whom she spoke with before, "I hate to bother you again, but do you know who just won the 400 meters?" The spectator replies, "That's Eddie Boganskaya. He wins every race he runs in." Kathy about chokes when she hears the news of who won. Kathy, managing as best as she can, tells the spectator, "Thanks," and walks back to the group. When she gets back to Eddie, Kathy tries to tell Eddie who just won the race, but just cannot get the words out. Suddenly concerned about Kathy, Eddie asks, "Hey, are you okay?" Paula exclaims, "What's wrong? Are you okay?" Choking on her words, Kathy replies, "Eddie. That's Eddie." Suddenly more concerned about Kathy, Eddie asks, "What? Kathy, are you okay?" With tears flowing down her face, Kathy replies, "No, Eddie. Eddie Boganskaya just won. That's our son." Eddie holds Kathy and takes another look out on the track at the winner. Kathy takes a while to compose herself, but now is waiting to see if Eddie Jr. will be running in another race today. Mark tells Paula, "Wow, there's an Eddie Jr. out there." Paula mentions, "I wonder if Eddie and Kathy are here somewhere watching." Kathy, who is not thinking right, replies, "We're right here." Paula tells Kathy, "No. Not you. The you in the future. You could be here watching somewhere." Kathy asks Mark and Paula, "Then, how do you know that you guys aren't here either?" Eddie looks around, not seeing anyone in the moderately populated bleachers that resembles the mechanic. At the other side of the track, Eddie notices a few people sitting on a smaller set of bleachers. The bleachers across the track have actual seats, rather than a bench, and seem to be reserved for special guests and VIPs. Best of all, the bleachers across the way have a great view of the starting and finish line for both the sprints and distance races, the relay transition zone, and the field events. Eddie whispers to Kathy, "Hey, there we are. Across the way on the other bleachers." Kathy replies, "Dang, we can't like just walk over there." Hearing that Kathy and Eddie's future counterparts are across the way, Paula asks, "So, who's that with you?" Kathy replies, "I don't know. How am I supposed to know?" Paula replies, "Oh, yeah. I thought that you would know because it's you that's over there." Eddie tells Mark and Paula, "If I had to take a wild guess, I would say that it's you guys." Taking a closer look, Paula puts her hand over her mouth and exclaims, "Oh my. That really is us. Wow. And I love my haircut." Kathy replies, telling Paula, "Duh. Of course you like your haircut. That's why you got it." Also taking a look, Mark tells Eddie, "I think you might be right. It looks like that's us." The call is made for the final event of the day, the 4x400-meter relay. Eddie and Kathy watch closely as the relay team assembles at the starting line. Three guys and one girl make up the Northside High School 4x400 relay team. Mark whispers to Paula, "If that is us over there, we're sitting at the edge of our seat. I wonder if one of those could be our kid." Paula, realizing the possibility, cannot even get words out. Kathy, now wanting more information, again walks down the row and tells the spectator, who is now sitting at the edge of her seat, "Hi. It's me again. I'm sorry to keep bothering you." The spectator, somewhat excited, replies, "Hi. My son is in this next race. He won the 800 meter earlier." Kathy replies, "Awesome," and asks, "Can you tell me who the runners are in this race?" The woman responds, "My son, Bernard Lowe, and there's Dawn and Mark Svoboda, and Eddie Boganskaya." Kathy, now anticipating surprises, replies, "Hey, thanks." Kathy has now heard more than she ever expected to hear today. When Kathy returns, Paula asks, "What did you find out?" Kathy asks Paula, "Are you sure you want to know?" Not expecting what she is about to hear in the least, Paula replies, "Try me." Kathy informs Mark and Paula, "One of the runners in the 4x400 relay team is Bernard Lowe. That's his mother sitting over there that I talked to. The other runners are Dawn Svoboda, Mark Svoboda, and Eddie Boganskaya." Paula screams, "What? Are you serious?" Kathy replies, "As serious as it gets. That's what she said." Mark and Paula look at each other and are at a loss for words. So, instead, they hug and kiss each other. The gun is fired, and the focus immediately shifts to the race. Mark Jr. is apparently the lead-off man and takes the lead. Mark, timing his son, has not realized yet that Mark Jr. is the runner who took second place in the 100-meter dash earlier today. Mark clocks Mark Jr. at 49.1 seconds as he hands off to Bernard Lowe. As Lowe runs his leg, Kathy notices the woman down the row on the bleachers is bouncing up and down on the edge of her seat. Eddie tells Kathy, "I clocked that guy at a 49.8. The baton is passed to Dawn, causing Mark and Paula to both start their stopwatches. With a significant lead, Dawn holds her own, extending the lead over the opposition. Dawn's leg comes in at 55.3 seconds as she hands off to Eddie Jr. As Eddie Jr. makes his way around the track, Mark exclaims, "He's pulling a Braden." Eddie Jr. rapidly approaches the finish line, fully intending to finish the race before Centerville's anchorman receives his baton. Eddie Jr. crosses the finish line with a time of 48.9 seconds, 2 seconds before the Centerville runner receives his baton. Some things just never change. With the meet now over, the group heads out quickly to avoid being spotted. As they exit the field at the south gate, Kathy tells Paula, "Hey, there's your Jeep." As the group rides by Paula's Jeep, Kathy mentions, "Hmm. I don't see my 914 or Eddie's MGB anywhere." Eddie tells Kathy, "Maybe we bought something else. After all, it's not like you can fit three people in your 914 or my MGB. Kathy replies, "You do have a point." As they are about to leave the parking lot, Paula tells Mark, "I can't believe I still have my Jeep." Mark asks, "How do you know that one of our kids ain't driving it?" Pointing to a car he knows Paula would absolutely hate, Mark tells Paula, "Hey, maybe that four-door sedan over there is your car." Paula, who doesn't even look, exclaims, "Never." By now, everyone knows that Paula absolutely hates four-door sedans. After looking over the different types of cars available 20 years into the future, they head back to the portal. Arriving back at their time, they head back to Mark's parents' house. Paula anxiously tells Mark, "Well, we'd better get busy." Mark asks, "Doing what?" Paula, who is about to panic, replies, "We're going to have kids. We have to get our house finished." And we have stuff to do for our wedding. All this stuff to do. When am I going to find the time to do it? Paula is panicking, feeling as if she has to do something. Mark puts his bicycle away and tells Paula, "Okay, let's go." Paula asks, "Where?" Mark, repeating Paula's suggestion, replies, "To the house. We have work to do." Eddie comically suggests, "Maybe you should add on a bedroom." Kathy assures Paula, "Everything's under control. Just breathe. Breathe." Getting herself together, Paula sighs and tells everyone, "Yeah. The house is almost finished, and our wedding is mostly all planned." Kathy then points out to Paula, "We were 20 years into the future. The oldest your kids could possibly have been is like 18 years old. That means that you have at least 2 or 3 years before you'll even be pregnant." Paula sighs and replies, "Yeah. I guess you're right." Kathy then reassures Paula, "You have lots of time." Since Paula just wants to do something, Kathy suggests, "Why don't you go to your house and put more water in your pool? Then, go and buy patio furniture. After all, summer is right around the corner." Paula exclaims, "I'm going to do that." Mark and Paula's pool is complete, but since they have well water, they have to add the water slowly, as to not run the well dry. Mark suggests, "And later, we can spread the rest of the pea gravel. Then, after I finish a few more things, the house will be ready to move in." Eddie asks, "Are you that far along?" Mark replies, "Yeah. I have a few cosmetic items left to do, but it's almost ready to move in." Paula asks, "Really?" Mark assures her, "Yeah. It's mostly all done." Paula, not realizing their house is so far along, is relieved. At the end of the semester, Kathy decides she wants to have a party for the entire university track team, including the coaches. After everyone's performance improved over the last half of the year, team morale has improved tremendously. And since Eddie, Mark, Mitchell, Braden, and Bobby B will be part of the team next year, Kathy figures what could be better than a party to build up the team spirit even more. Erica, who applied to the university, will be attending with Bobby B. And Kathy simply couldn't leave out Hoffa, Tessa, and Akinmola, who are graduating this year. Kathy has persuaded Hoffa to apply to the university, which he did, hoping that he will also join the team next year.